This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending? Big picture.
So it turns out, possibly soon, in Washington State, illegal immigrants are going to have more rights than business owners right here at home. The Senate just passed a bill that's soon going to go to the House. It would make immigration status a protected class in employment and in rentals. State Senator Doug Erickson, the Republican from Ferndale, friend of the show, he says lawmakers are sabotaging Border Patrol efforts here.
Basically creates a protected class of people who have actually broken the law to get here. We have lots of hardworking men and women who go to work every day to defend our borders. But here in Olympia, we keep creating enticements for people to try to come into our state and into our country illegally.
Now, on top of that, now you're never going to know if someone's here illegally.
Which means if you're an employer, you couldn't ask their status if they're here legally or not. If you're going to rent an apartment, if you're going to engage in any activity, the status is now being granted to these people here illegally.
On its face, this bill is absurd. It's absolutely absurd because under this law, you would be forced to break federal law. Because they're saying if all is equal, let's say you've got two candidates in front of you for a job, same job, they have the exact same qualifications, they both seem legit, they're the exact same age, they're asking for the exact same amount of money, they did exactly the same way through the interview process, maybe they had to take some sort of test ahead of the, everything is equal, you cannot choose the person who's here legally over the person who's here illegally. You can't even inquire about their status to work in this country legally. And the same would go for rent. You've got two people who are exactly the same. You can't say, I'm going to go with the person who's here in this country legally versus the person who's illegal immigrant. You would be a criminal if you did that, not the person who's here illegally. That's what this law would do. It forces a business to hire an illegal immigrant, which puts you at risk, federally speaking, because it's against the law. And it forces you to rent to someone who's here illegally, which puts you on the line as a landlord, especially if this person would maybe get deported, and then you have to put your house back on the market before you actually intended to. This is ridiculous. They are forcing you to break the law. And I can't understand why they're doing it beyond just wanting to take a message to the president that says, hey, we actually support open borders. Now, of course, this vote went along party lines. And now it's going to the House. And what do we say on this show on a regular basis now? It's our new mantra, I suppose. One person is all it takes to change things. And because it's a Friday, because they just got done with all of their bills, and I'm going to double check over the weekend to make sure that the homeless encampment bill is fully dead. I have one more call to make and find that out before we declare victory, but I'm very close to declaring victory. On Monday, I'm going to ask all of us, unless I forget, which is why producer Tom is going to write this down so I don't forget. Write it down. You didn't even move. You didn't even pick up a pen. Grab the pen. Write this down because I'm going to forget. There you go. No, that's a scissor. Get a pen. No, that's a stapler. But no, get the pen. Okay, there we go. He's got a pen now. Write this down. On Monday, I'm going to tell you the members of the House, the Democrats, who are in purple districts, who I believe we can contact and actually have an impact on how they vote on a particular bill. Because it takes one person to make one phone call to spend 1 minute of your time to convince a lawmaker that they're on the wrong side of an issue. We're going to be way more active now in Washington State. We have to be. We don't have control of the Senate or the House. So we have to put in a little bit more effort than we normally would be. And for some of you, it's a lot more effort, even though I'm asking you to make one phone call. You cannot complain about whether or not this bill gets passed if you're unwilling to get involved and make a phone call. So we're going to push this on Monday. Did you write? You wrote that down? That's just a heart.
No, it's
that's
a cat.
Just a heart. That's a cat?
Yeah, look at the whiskers are right there. And its tongue sticking out. Because it's silly.
Oh my God. I hate you so much. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Governor Inslee is running for president. I would have thought you could make this up, and that's what it would be, just an act of fiction, maybe a little novella. But it turns out, no, he's running, and he's running exclusively on the issue of climate change.
We went to the moon and created technologies that have changed the world. Our country's next mission must be to rise up to the most urgent challenge of our time.
What is it?
Defeating climate change.
Oh, if I thought that that was the biggest issue facing this country, I still would not go with Jay Inslee, because Jay Inslee is an incompetent boob. We know that because we know how he's run Washington State. He has a horrible track record. He can't figure out how to run the Department of Corrections, which two times now, once 4 years ago and once just about a month ago, month and a half ago, they decided to just release a whole bunch of prisoners way too soon before they were supposed to be let go. And as a result, there are at least two homicides tied to the early releases. This happened under his watch. Jay Inslee, as a candidate, promised no taxes. I'm not going to lean on taxes to fund what it is we're doing here. The first year he got into office in 2013, he pushed for $1 billion more in taxes. He pushes for a capital gains tax. He pushes for more taxes on businesses via the B&O tax. He pushed for a carbon tax, which was a failure, which would have been his only legislative accomplishment that he could legitimately take credit for as governor, having to do with the environment. He has no track record other than talking about supporting the environment. And so, of course, now people are wondering if his delusion is something that could maybe become a reality. Margaret O'Meara is a professor of history at the University of Washington. She's all like, well, maybe, I guess it's possible.
Well, it's a long time until November 2020. And, you know, you never know. You know, in a way, the crowded field, it lengthens the odds for an individual candidate, but it also provides room for surprises.
When someone says you never know, that's not a good sign. That usually means there's no chance, but you're just going to humor the individual because you don't want to be mean. Well, you never know. I mean, you could make it and become the next president. It's possible, you know, never say never. Bob Ferguson, of course, says the governor has a shot. And understand, Bob Ferguson is going to work his tail off to make sure Jay Inslee becomes something other than the governor, because he doesn't want him running for a third term, because Bob Ferguson himself wants to become governor.
In my experience in politics, things can change fast. And like you said, we're March 1st, 2019. The caucuses in Iowa are many months away. That's an eternity in politics. So
no,
I think Governor Inslee has a legitimate shot at this thing. I think people in Iowa are going to like him as a human being. They're going to see he's an excellent campaigner. He's a hard worker, and he's got a strong message. So I think he's got a shot this thing.
Doesn't.
Hard to predict how these things are going to shake out.
It's
I think he's the kind of person that the people of the state of Iowa might really respond to.
They won't. They won't. That's Bob Ferguson talking to our sister station, Cairo Radio, and Matt Pittman. Matt also got a chance to talk with the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, Tina Podlodowski. She's a supporter. Here she is lying about something.
I have kids in their 20s, and for them, climate is the number one issue.
No,
they will
not.
Tell me,
nope.
You know,
nope.
Your generation
nope. No,
has
don't.
Screwed this up.
Nope.
We've got to fix it.
They don't say that. They don't say that. Sorry. Young people overwhelmingly talk about the economy in their own way. They talk about the fact that they're hit with extremely high student loan debt that they can't afford to pay back quickly because rent is so high. That's what they're talking about. Let us not pretend that because some progressive activists who are millennials talk about the environment, let's not pretend that that's their number one issue. It is not. It is not their number one issue. And let's say it was their number one issue. Well, you know what? They don't vote. They don't. There was an outlier with President Obama, then candidate Obama. That was the outlier. They didn't come out in big numbers for Hillary Clinton, even though they loathe Donald Trump. So let us just stop pretending that somehow this is going to be the issue that gets all the young voters out. Producer Tom went out and spoke to people, Seattle voters on the streets, just grabbed about a dozen or so of them. Not a single one thought it was a good idea for Jay Inslee to run for president. No one thinks this is a good idea except for Jay Inslee, who's probably not running for president, even though he's running for president. He's running for either to be the VP, which will never happen either, or he's running so he can get a cabinet position, because he's not interested in being the governor of Washington anymore. He's done. He was done the second he got elected. just like as a congressman. The second he was elected, he said, okay, I'm bored. I want to do something else. Let's be clear about this. That's what he's doing. He has no shot. But we'll be with it every step of the way, every stumble of the way. KTTH will be covering his embarrassment on a national stage. His embarrassment will not be our embarrassment, because we're going to be on the right side of this one, which is calling him out as the hack that he is. Don't forget, you can find us on Instagram. During this next commercial break, I'm going to wander the studios. I'll give you a nice little behind-the-scenes look at what it is we do here every single day. Go on Instagram, search for the name Jason Rantz, J-A-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Go there now, check it out, and enjoy the show. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she does not want you to eat hamburgers. She thinks that's bad for the environment. She says, stop it with the burgers. Which got producer Tom hungry to eat more burgers. Turns out he's really passionate about burgers. It's a weird kind of passion to have, but it's a passion that he has. Who am I to judge? It's weird, but who am I to judge? So last week, as he searches for the best burger joint in Western Washington, he found himself going to 8-Ounce Burger and Company. Today, he's going to Little Big Burger.
Tom here. I'm on a mission to find the best burger in the city of Seattle. The second stop of my journey was Little Big Burger in the Wallingford neighborhood, where I order the basic cheeseburger, which they tell me is the most popular. This is another 60-second burger review brought to you by The Jason Rantz Show. Don't be naive. The size of the burger is in the name. It's small, relatively thick, but still small, checking in at a fourth of a pound. It's naturally cooked at medium and served on a brioche bun, which does its job in complementing the burger. It comes with your choice of cheese, I'm always a pepper jack guy, lettuce, red onion, and Camden's ketchup. Folks, this is a delicious burger. The ingredients were fresh, and the onions really jump out at you with a spicy, sweet tag team, adding tremendous flavor. The fries I ordered with the burger were great, but I didn't reach for them once until my burg was gone. It's no surprise Little Big Burger has two new locations coming to Seattle, in Green Lake and on Cap Hill. And by the way, I'm not the only one loving this burger. I got in right before the lunch hour surge. The building filled up. Now, while it's small, it's only $5. I debated grabbing another, because just the one won't fill you up. Overall, it's a great way to drop a fiver, and I would recommend this burger to anyone. I'm going to give the Little Big Burger Cheeseburger an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
What do you think of the burger? Where should I go next? Tweet me, at New Producer Tom. My name's Tom Amato, and this has been another 60-second burger review brought to you by The Jason Rantz Show.
That's interesting. I've not actually heard of Little Big Burger. I've never heard of Little Big Burger, but you're giving it an 8 out of 10. By the way, you can also text us if you'd like, 1-800-465-8770. You can tell us where you want producer Tom to go next as he searches for the best burger of Seattle. Two comments?
Yeah.
Okay. It's weird to eat the burger first and then eat the fries. That's not normal. You're supposed to eat them together. You take a couple bites of the burger, then you take some fries. That's
the
correct way.
Well, I would normally agree a good burger will have you finish the burger before it gets anything else.
No.
Yeah?
No, you can have... I've had a good burger, and then I eat some of the fries. It's a little bit of a different of a texture. It cleanses the palate a little bit. So that's the correct way. So it's weird that you're just eating the burger. And
maybe
then
that's a reflection of how good the burger is.
No,
the taste is really good.
It's a reflection of how weird you are.
I just told my experience. I said the burger is good. I don't want to put it down.
It's your experience. I'm just saying you're a freak. Number two, pepper jack. I find that on burgers, especially pepper jack, the cheese gets lost.
The cheese gets lost? No, it adds a little,
I don't think spice to it. I can never honestly pick up on it. And so I've just stopped ordering cheese on burgers because I never taste the cheese.
Well, I guess
sometimes because I need the fat for the keto diet, like I'll get the cheese because it adds that, but I never taste it.
I guess that's why you're not the one doing the burger reviews.
comment like that again means you're not going to be the one doing the burger reviews either.
That is just so easy. That's such an easy insult. It doesn't show intellectual superiority.
Oh, yes, it does.
No, it's just like a backhanded swipe at something easy. That's like a your mom joke.
But it's almost like you're so simple.
Daring
me to kill the burger review now. Because now you're putting me on the spot to have to show my power. Is that what you're doing, or do you want to
continue? That would be the easy thing to do.
Okay, well, I like doing easy things.
All right.
Okay, I guess this was your last burger.
Nope.
Don't send any more texts at 1-800-465-8770. Just don't send any more recommendations, because he's not going to do them anymore. He challenged me, and there we go. Oh, here we go. Here's a text. Fries first so they don't get cold. And yes, Pepper Jack is awesome. So Doug from Tacoma is giving you a win and me a win. I don't think you should eat the fries first. I'm saying you should eat them both around the same time. And if you want to be a true baller, you know what you do? You put the fries on the burger.
That's crazy. That's
communist. Nope. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
I'm not going to spend too much time on this because on the surface, it's kind of boring. First Lady Melania Trump is going to be in the Seattle area on Monday, and I'll tell you this, we're working behind the scenes. We're trying to work to get someone to just give us a little bit of consideration to put First Lady Trump on this show. Now, it's almost assuredly not going to happen, and it's not going to happen in part because we're just not that impressive to them. But in equal part, I feel like the Trump administration overall has decided to give up for now on the power of talk radio. They embraced conservative talk radio during the campaign. They put people on the shows all the time, all across the country, because they understood the power of this medium. They understood that they would be talking to people who the media generally forgets about and doesn't care about and dismisses. Of course, we care about you. Of course, we spend our time talking directly to you. We are here for you. And it feels like right now, it's very difficult to get anyone from the administration to come and do talk radio shows. They're not completely cut off from it. Some of them do if you're doing someone a favor. We'll get the secretary of the VA on, Scott Frisk. We had him on a few months ago. We had the undersecretary on as well. But that's kind of it. And I'm wondering if you guys are noticing that they are dismissing talk radio, because what's going to be weird is when he runs officially in 2020, when he makes the big announcement and he goes out on the campaign trail, I'm assuming that the White House is going to yet again deliver a really smart media strategy, which is get as much free coverage on TV as possible, with the president saying some you know, random things that maybe upset some folks. But then he's going to put a lot of the people on TV, on the radio. A lot of the campaign staff, they're going to force surrogates on as many radio shows as they can. And I'm wondering if we should just say no at that point, because it feels like they've lost interest in us now. When they don't need our support, they kind of just don't come to us. Now, maybe that's me just being sensitive. I don't need to talk to First Lady Melania Trump. I'm not entirely sure I know what it is I'd want to talk to her about. She's in town for an initiative called Be Best. It addresses childhood well-being, online safety, and opioid abuse. I mean, I care about all of those, I guess. I'm more passionate about the opioid side. The online safety thing, I think we make a little bit too much of a deal of. So I suppose I would throw some softballs, and then we would talk about life in the White House and the unfair treatment the media puts on her and her husband. I think it would be interesting, and it would be good certainly for this radio show to get that such a name of a guest on the show. Should I be taking this personally? Should we all take this personally, that he's sort of given up, or the administration at least has given up, on talk radio? I'd love to hear from you. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Should we be taking this personally, or should we give him a pass? Because, oh, he's busy. I don't think Ben Carson's busy. We can't get Ben on.
Oh, Ben would be great.
Carson.
Well, you know him like when you know him like I do, you just call him Ben. In fact, I call him Benny sometimes. Benny! My man, Benny.
What's he the secretary of?
His own life. He runs his own life. He sets up his own meetings and
Say HUD.
Say what?
HUD.
HUT.
HUD.
HUT.
Oh, God. I tried, folks. I tried.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show, my favorite part of the show. 4:30 weekday afternoons. We do something called the Big Local thanks to our sponsor, Sean Keller Smiles by Design. You see, the media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. We end up ignoring a lot of important and interesting, and yes, sometimes quirky stories happening all across the state. So we decide to focus on the communities you live in, the communities you care about, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle, and it feels good to ignore the city of Seattle. And we start in Snohomish. There's a $1,000 reward right now on the line for vandals who did donuts destroying soccer fields in Snohomish.
It was almost just disbelief that someone would come out and do this.
That's Snohomish Youth Soccer Club spokesperson Michael Mikulski talking with Cairo 7. You see, Saturday night, witnesses saw someone driving a dark-colored SUV and a big figure eight across soccer fields. He did it several times. Apparently, the recent snow ended up softening the pitch, the field. And as a result of that, the truck left behind six-inch deep ruts.
This is a community place for children to play soccer. I mean, you're just hurting the kids at that point. It's a real travesty.
You're hurting about 1,300 kids, youth soccer players. 1,300. Because you decided to pull some stupid stunt. So now some of the fields are unusable for weeks, maybe even a month or so, while they're being repaired.
We're going to have to excavate most of it out to be able to put it all back.
And of course, that costs money. And so if you have any information on who's responsible for this, or if you want to help them out, contact the Snohomish Youth Soccer Club. Any tip that leads to an arrest of this loser who decided to do this gets $1,000. And you know what? I'm throwing in some money, too. You want to go in with this with me? A tip leading to... Yeah, let's... Oh, it's not going to be a lot. We're not going to do $1,000. Mm. Let's do $100. And to be fair... I will put up four of them.
Answer me this. This was a baseball field.
I wouldn't care about
that. Yeah, that's right.
It's because it's soccer. Because you know what? Kids don't get enough attention when they're into soccer because they've got a whole bunch of adults out there who hate soccer. Did you know that the Sounders season was starting tomorrow? I bet you didn't because you don't care about soccer. What about these 1,300 kids? There are 1,300 kids right now whose lives are impacted as a result of this idiot who decided to do figure eights across a soccer field. And you know what? My guess is the person was drunk or high when he or she was doing it, but let's be clear, it's probably a he. And so this person should have to pay. This is absolutely ridiculous. Meanwhile, a Russian broadcaster claims that in the event of nuclear war, the Kremlin is going to target a city in Washington state. That city? Arlington. Our sister station, Cairo Radio's Heather Bosch reports.
It's Naval Radio Station Jim Creek, a 4,700-acre site east of Arlington that the Seattle Times says is a key transmission center for the Pacific Submarine Fleet. Russian broadcaster Dmitry Kislyov included Jim Creek, the Pentagon, and Camp David on a map of targets he says his country's supersonic missiles would target first in a nuclear war. But the map also included Fort Ritchie in Maryland and California's McLennan Air Force Base. Those have been closed for about 20 years.
In a statement, the Department of Defense referred to the report as propaganda. No comment from the Kremlin, which is why I'm not entirely sure I'm going to back what the DOD says. I want to hear from the Kremlin. Poor folks in Arlington. Poor Arlington. Arlington people don't talk enough about. The only time I hear people talking about Arlington, at least in the last couple months, this report of them being a potential target for nuclear war, which they're not. And then that stupid television show, I can't remember what it was called, but they're getting, do you know which one I'm talking about? Like best home, best downtown that needs refurbishing, basically. Hmm. It's a competition. They go all across the country. They try to find the sort of the downtown areas of smaller cities that need just a little bit of some upkeep and R&R. And the ones that win end up having a whole bunch of people, experts, going down to their main street and they fix it up.
Is this one of Gordon Ramsay's shows?
No.
Because he's a big fixer-upper in like hotels, restaurants.
No, this is a bigger sort of like a bigger kind of project. It's not, I don't remember what it's called. If you know what it is, 1-800-465-8770. I feel kind of bad that that's what Arlington is getting. Meanwhile, Puyallup teachers demanded more pay for less work. And as a result, a little bit of irony and a little bit of, you kind of asked for it. The school district now is going to cut some positions and increase class size, which means you thought you were going to get more money and do less work. It's going to be the opposite. You got your money. You got your money. But now you're going to do more work. And by the way, you're hurting these kids. So congratulations. Just good for you, man. We should have had like an applause, like a big, like a sound effect.
Something like this.
That just sounded like you were doing a weird dance.
That was really fast though, huh?
The agreed upon contract offered a salary increase north of 10%. First year teacher salaries jumped $47,000 to $52,000. Salaries for teachers with 16 years of experience and a master's degree or doctorate went from $92,000, oh, and they were barely scraping by in Puyallup with $92,000, to $102,000. Now, to cover the cost, according to the News Tribune, the district used $5 million out of its fund balance, which cannot be replenished. And as a result, according to the district communications director, Brian Fox, they now have to cut some staff members. It's not clear yet how many positions are going to be affected. But if you're one of those positions that's going to be cut as a result of this, you're going to hear by May 15th if you face being laid off. Now, I remember at the time that the Puyallup teachers were asking for more money with the union helping them, I remember the district saying, just like they did in Tacoma, if we give you this, we will have to make some cuts. We do not have the funding necessary to accommodate your asks. And again, let's not pretend that $47,000 in the city of Puyallup for a first-year teacher, let's not pretend that that's a little bit of money. It's not. It's a lot in Puyallup. $47,000 goes a really long way. Now, some will be cut through attrition. That's the only partial good news in this, meaning that someone retires, they're just not going to refill that role. But that role still has a job that needs to be done, and as a consequence, the teachers who didn't care and wanted less work, some of them are going to have to pick up these responsibilities. And so, yeah, congratulations. You got your money, but you cost some people their jobs. You cost some people their jobs, and you're going to have to do it for them now. The teachers' union doesn't care. They don't care. As long as the people employed keep giving them a portion of their paycheck in union dues, they don't care. No one ever seems to think about the consequences of stuff like this. They just scream at the top of their lungs, we are owed more because we take care of your kids. We do so much hard work. Yes, we take several months out of the year off to enjoy summer vacation and we get a nice spring break and a winter break. But we work our tails off. We want less classroom sizes, smaller classroom sizes, less work, more time off, and more money. Okay, well, you got some of it. And you cost some people their jobs, so I hope you're happy. Next, in Everett, the student whose grandmother warned the Everett PD that he was planning a school shooting at Aces, he was just sentenced. 19 years old now. He'll be in his early 40s when he's released because he just got a jail term of 22 and a half years. Now, the judge turned to the grandmother to praise her for doing the right thing and actually reporting her suspicions to the cops. You'll remember that she found a binder filled with notes on a school shooting that he was planning. He just randomly picked Aces High School. And she intervened. She called the cops. They got him before he did anything.
To me, ma'am, you are a hero. Because I truly believe, even though it was argued that your grandson could have changed his mind and not carried out his plan on that date, I'm convinced, based on everything that I saw, that he was going to carry it out. And had you not intervened, there have been many, many lives that would have been lost, including your own grandsons.
22 and a half years. I talked about this about, 2 weeks ago when they originally postponed the sentencing? And I listened to this kid deliver his pre-written speech to the court, and he said he was sorry. In fact, he even took a moment out of the speech to thank his grandmother for calling the cops on him, knowing that he's going to see some jail time.
I'm glad my grandmother intervened when she did. She's the true hero in all of this. She saved my life, and for that, I love her.
It feels like 22 and a half years when you're 19 years old. It feels like you're setting this kid up for an impossible life. that he's never going to get back on the right track, because you're going to get out of jail at 42, 43 years old. What kind of life are you going to be able to have? You're not going to be able to get a job. And if you are, you're probably not going to be able to keep that job because you're going to get harassed. You're going to have a hard time finding a relationship. You're going to be in a really tough spot with a 22 and a half year sentence on something that thankfully you didn't actually go through with. Now, they believe he was going to go through with it. My sense is, based on the reports on the story, that he is more a element that is the victim of circumstance, meaning in part the environment he was in. His mother apparently was very mentally ill. In fact, the grandparents had to take him from the mother. And by the time they finally intervened, it was too far gone at that point. Isn't this someone who needs actual mental health? Lots of therapy? I don't know what the right amount of years is for this kind of punishment. I have no idea. But I don't get the sense that this is a kid who's just pure evil. I got that sense with some others. I got that sense with the Columbine kids. I got that sense with the shooter from Stoneman Douglas. I don't get that sense with this kid. I don't. And so I'm just wondering if this was too much. Because what are we going to expect he makes of his life once he actually gets out of jail? And maybe we shouldn't care. He brought this on himself. He decided to try to go through with this. But again, he didn't. I'd like to hear from you. Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. I'm usually pretty harsh when it comes to punishments. For whatever reason, the circumstances here got to me a little bit more than some of the other stories. And I think 22 and a half years is way too long for this kind of issue with this individual in this context. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let me know your thoughts. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget, we are on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Go there, go behind the scenes of the show, enjoy what it is we do there, which is conversations with all of us about the issues that actually matter. See video, see photos. We do a lot of fun stuff there. It's the full immersive experience of the show on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. So we discussed this a little bit in the middle of the week, but there's been a meeting since then. So I wanted to give you an update on this Georgetown Sobering Center. Georgetown, a neighborhood in Seattle, has a whole bunch of residents there pushing back pretty hard against this plan coming from King County that is moving a sobering center for chronic alcoholics and addicts right in the middle of the neighborhood. Now, it's not that the people are there are against the concept. They tell Como, this is just us being about against this particular location.
I haven't heard really anyone in the community say that that's a bad idea. I think the concern is really that it's placed in the middle of the neighborhood.
So yesterday or 2 days ago, they had this community meeting to discuss the plans. They're doing this now after the plan has already been moved forward with, right? They're already doing this. They're already doing the construction. They're already committed to this idea. But only now are they engaging the folks who live in the neighborhood directly impacted by this. And Como says virtually every single person at this meeting told them, why don't you pause the plans so we can actually have a real conversation where we can have some impact?
You're going to basically get the clients against the neighborhood of Georgetown.
We're struggling with a huge homeless, illegal, drug-addicted, like, encampment problem.
There is generally a theme when we talk about these kinds of projects. This is a theme that's not unique to Seattle. It's happening in Everett. It happens in Olympia. It happens in Port Orchard. This is the general theme. Cities move forward with plans that impact neighborhoods without actually talking to the neighborhood first. They know better than you, so they don't want you to be a part of it, because then you'll just muck it all up. You'll give us your opinions. You'll make valid points. They'll say things that totally make sense, but we don't really want to hear. So we're just going to completely ignore you. We're going to blindside you. We're going to have one meeting on a Tuesday at 7:30 that you're only going to be able to find out about if you happen to follow like obscure Twitter feeds. You're able to find it on a confusing website somewhere in a blog post buried all the way at the bottom of the website. Then when you get mad and say, oh, you didn't have any meetings. Oh, what are you talking about? We had a meeting the other day. How many people showed up? 3. Then that means people didn't actually know about the meeting. And you know how I can tell that? Because when they actually get caught doing that and then they hold a meeting that is better publicized, it's standing room only. The theme is that locals are not being listened to.
You're going to basically get the clients against the neighborhood of Georgetown.
That's an important point. That's an important point. That's an important point that bears repeating, because you want these people to be set up for success, but you are putting them in a position, King County, these people who are dealing with addiction, you are putting them in a position to be the bad guys because you chose not to actually engage in the community. Now, King County Department of Community and Human Services Director Leo Floor told Cairo 7 that we're in a time of reflection right now.
We have a lot of time right now, I think, to listen and continue to tailor and to adjust what we're doing.
That's a lie. There is no time. They're not going to change anything. They've already selected the spot for this. They've already started the construction.
We also are cognizant that this is a life-saving service that's been in the community for 20 years.
Okay, so in other words, we're the experts. You're not. Shut your faces. That's basically what he's saying. And that's why so many people are angry.
We're compassionate to what they're trying to do with the program. We're not compassionate to the fact that they don't seem to think that it's their responsibility to suss out the situation ahead of time.
So even though this is King County, I'm going to talk about something that happened in Seattle specific with a Seattle department. They put in a tiny home village for homeless people very close to where I live. They made the decision before they had any community outreach. And then they lied about making the decision. Then they even dragged their feet in confirming that there was a community meeting. When they got called out, they did some backtracking. They said, oh, you just don't know what you're talking about. We haven't made a decision. And then they came out in the second community meeting and said, we already made a decision. And by the way, that decision was the exact decision I said that they had made when they told me they hadn't made a decision. They're doing this again in Genesee Park, where they're taking over a parking lot, and they're turning it into an overnight shelter for homeless people living in their cars. Now, they say they haven't made any decisions, and yet they've already applied for a permit. I've got the actual permit. And then when I asked the city, what's going on? You told me the other day you didn't make a decision. And I asked, hey, can you tell me whether or not you got permits for any other potential homeless sites? Because remember, there are 3 sites for this parking lot. I now know that they applied for a permit at one of them, Genesee Park. So I reached out to the city and I said, did the city get permits for any of the other potential homeless car lots or just Genesee? You know what the response was that I got? I'll read it for you. I've got it on my phone right now. This was the response to that specific question. We are evaluating multiple potential locations and no decision has been made prior to community engagement. No site or sites have been selected. Did that answer my question? Because my question was whether or not they applied for permits elsewhere. And so my response was a little bit snarky. I said, understood. And then I just copy and pasted the first question again. And then I hear, no permits have been issued. I got that. That's not what I asked. This is what they do. This is how they get out of being called out as liars. They're liars. And I don't know if it's the mayor's office, specifically the mayor who's lying. Does this come from the top, or is she being lied to by the people who work for her? But you know what? I'm going to find out. And you know what they really, really hate? When I start targeting them for an investigation, asking certain questions and not giving up, and then getting emails, and then getting all of the documents that they put up behind the scenes, because I know how to get them. And I've got a lot of people working in the city in various departments who are giving me a whole lot of stuff. So don't lie to us. Don't lie to the Jason Rance Show.